What's your, do you live in like an apartment building?
Yeah, well, it's like a row home.
Okay, right.
So we're real, like, I'm never further than like 7 feet from another human being. Right. Which is weird sometimes.
Do you work from home?
I wish. No, I go to work.
That's not that bad of a thing.
Yeah.
Work still work. You know, like, there are benefits to being at home, but you still have to get out of the house.
Yeah, I've done both, and, you know, both of them have their ups and downs.
Right.
You know, usually it's whatever you're doing, you want the opposite of. Like, when I worked in an office, I wanted to work from home, and then as soon as I started working from home, I was like, I wish I had a place that I had to go every
I don't want the opposite. I'm good with the working at home.
I'm good with working at home now because it's winter time.
You guys both work from...
Yeah, I just started working from home, like, in the past. Like, I was doing, like, a bunch of freelance, like, design and illustration work for, like, 6 years or so. But then, like, the past 2 years, I've been doing, like, art director stuff. And so that, you know, you have to kind of be on site for that. But now I've gone back to kind of freelance between, like, two or three things. So I get to work from home most of the time. But then I still have to show up for meetings here and there.
Yeah, I feel like that's a good balance.
It's good, yeah.
Like,
it's
if I just had to go to work when they needed me to, when they needed to look at me.
Right. Well, what I like about it is, like, I can't turn into, like, a complete hermit where it's like I feel like I have to at least look presentable when I go there. So it almost, like, gives me reasons to, like, have to take a shower and shave and, like, put on. I'm not joking either. Like, put on a new set of clothes and then go out there and, like, talk to other humans and, like.
Well, I'm laughing because I understand exactly that. Like, if I worked from home, like, I think I would just wear a robe and just never be presentable for the outside world.
Yeah.
That's generous.
I live in a really small house by myself, and it feels like, it feels like a small spaceship or something. 'Cause, like, I never leave it. And it has, like, just enough, like, living quarters and food preparation quarters. Like, I dropped my girlfriend off one morning. It was, like, Monday morning. And, like, her work is a lot of, you know, going to meetings and dealing with people. And from when I had dropped her off Monday to when I met her Friday night, I hadn't left the house. Like, you know, she asked me, like, what have you been up to? And it was, like, where did you go? The way she said it, I forget how, but it was, like, you know, like, nowhere. I went absolutely nowhere.
My wife went away for for a week. Uh-huh. I can't remember what it was for, but I spent 3 days without even getting the mail. Like, the first 3 days that she was gone, it was just like this caffeine work session. And then you realize, like, 3 days have gone by. And I remember, like, Paul Pope used to always write about that stuff in THB, and he'd be like, man, you can kill it for 3 days. And then on day four, yeah, you just can't really work anymore. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was like, that's just ridiculous. Right. Of course you could work longer if you had to. You could work 4 days if you had to work 4 days. And that 3 days and off, if you're really killing it for 3 days, it runs out.
Losing track of days is terrible. I don't like that at all. Like, that happens a lot now, where, like, I have to remind myself, like, you know, today's Wednesday, or
I can never keep track of days.
Yeah.
I got a calendar late last year, like a 2-page, like, each month is like a 2-page spread. Uh-huh. It has changed my life.
Oh, really?
Oh, man.
Really?
I think I'm the happiest I've ever been in my life, and I think it might be due to this calendar.
Well,
it's just changed everything.
I thought you were just going to say it was just like, you might as well just have graph paper.
Like, you know why? It's nothing. Like, I can see it. Like, I just open, you know, like, I clip whichever month it is, and then I can just open it whenever I need to and go ahead. Like, mm-hmm. If I have something, like, I have stuff in August and shit written down.
I have to put up bulletin boards. I have these two bulletin boards that are going to go, like, right in front of my computer.
Yes.
Like, it'll take up that entire thing. Remember whenever I put together the first issue of the science fair and, like, my basement was like, that's true.
Hey, Mike.
Hey,
do you edit?
Sometimes.
Okay. Is there, like, I mean, is there anything we need to go over? Should we start?
Are we starting, or do we need to...
I mean, I was just kind of letting you guys go and we were going to ease into it. Like, if you don't mind, like, leaving, like, that work stuff in,
Okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, man. Talk about any, like, we expect people on our show to talk about anything more or less. Right. So, you know, like, we can't really go on someone else and then like not do that, you know?
All right, that's awesome. All right, so this is a good place to start then, because okay. You know, for, well, do you guys want to introduce yourselves then to the listeners out in listener land?
Okay. I'm Jim Rugg. I'm a cartoonist and illustrator, designer, and also a podcast creator. So comics that I'm known for are like Aphrodisiac, Street Angel, Plain Janes, and then our podcast is Tell Me Something I Don't Know.
My name is Jason Lex. I'm the other co-host of Tell Me Something I Don't Know. I'm a designer and illustrator and a cartoonist. I self-published a graphic novel called The Gypsy Lounge. I had a mini series called The Science Fair, and I'm currently working on a book called Washington Unbound, which I hope to finish by the end of this year.
Awesome. All right. So introductions are done. I enjoy Tell Me Something I Don't Know. I enjoy your guys' show. And basically, I feel like it's because, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, but you guys sort of seem to give the impression that you're really interested in like the little things that make up people's days or people's work or their outlook on either of those things. Do you think that sounds about accurate? Am I hearing things?
No, that's very accurate. Like the people that come on the show. And I'm not speaking for Jason or we have a producer now. Ed Pisker came on as a producer. So this, you know, these are just my opinions. But I want some bit of information that will make basically my life better. That's what I'm after whenever these people come on the show.
Yeah, that we just started season two of our show and it's at Boing Boing now. And like Ed's our producer now. But we started it roughly about a year ago around this time. Jim and I did like a few test recordings to see if we would do like a podcast of just, I guess, us two. I don't know if that was the original plan. But you know, and then like our first episode was Tom Scioli, because you know, he's a close friend of ours and we had known him for years. So we started really small, but, what was really interesting was, we, you know, interviewed Tom and I've known Tom for 10 years. And then a week later, there was a really small art show here in Pittsburgh that gave out free table space. And I ended up sitting next to him. And it was funny because like in that, you know, just in that sitting down and talking to him, there was like so much more I knew about him that I don't know if I had already assumed I knew it or it just maybe had never come up in regular conversation. But you know, like the main impetus for the show was, I guess like a summer or two ago, me and Jim, like we've been meeting like almost weekly since we got out of school, like, and just planning and talking about comics and stuff. But we always said like everyone we meet is like this,
like super just, interesting.
Well, yeah, but like everyone we meet is like, they have information that we don't know that we basically want to get from them. And the talk show is like the most polite and friendly way to do that.
It's awesome to have like, the conversations basically are conversations we wouldn't have otherwise.
Right.
You know, because you see all these people, you know, a lot of the people we have on the show are cartoonists. So we see them at comic book shows and then you see all of them, you know, like you see everybody that you know that you haven't seen for 6 months. So you talk for, you know, 2 minutes at a time and with 10 people at once. Whenever people come on the show, it's a chance to really like talk about, it's to have conversations that we wouldn't be having otherwise.
Go on.
I was going to say, like, I even think, you know, I became friends with Jim for like the, I think sort of the same reason why we want to interview people is that, you know, making art is really, really different for each and every person. Like even within comics, the range of art and, you know, the way art's produced is so vast that each person you talk to almost has like a different method. Like there's even things that I do in Photoshop and Jim does in Photoshop where we arrive at the same solution, but we have a completely different process for it, where it's almost like trying to talk to everybody and trying to form like this giant bell curve of, you know, everything.
Who is the beneficiary of your guys' interviews? Is it something that like it's for your benefit and you record it for posterity or for other people who share interests in the minute details Does that question make sense?
Yeah, I think that it's for anybody, you know, like I think of myself as like trying to learn how to make interesting stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So I know a lot of, like everybody I know is trying to make interesting stuff at this point. So I think that, you know, you just get somebody on and have them talk about what they're most passionate about, and they're going to tell you stuff that you just wouldn't know otherwise. And there's always like it's useful information. There's a lot of overlap between what I'm trying to do and what, you know, anybody that's trying to make something is going through.
I think it's also really good just to point out just how difficult it is to make these things. You know, what everybody does is absolutely fueled by like this passion or this mania to complete this thing or make this thing, because most of the time it's a very time consuming and a very arduous process. And so, you know, people sharing those experiences and also sharing like how, you know, they've sort of overcome that or how to make it faster or easier. You know, I think it's really insightful.
Going back to something that you said earlier, you know, about talking to your friends and having them on the show and getting a different context than you would at a convention or at a drink and draw or something like that. Is there ever a weirdness where it feels like it's weird or difficult to be that formal with people that you consider friends and colleagues? To have like a formal interview setting?
I don't feel like we've run into that.
Yeah, not really. I think it's just whenever we're less acquainted with that person, it probably just feels more formal.
And I think, you know, if you listen to a number of our shows, you'll hear some of the exchanges are very informal. It's very much just like we're catching up with, you know, friends on the phone or something. You know, so it doesn't feel, that part doesn't feel awkward at all. And it's not like we're after some, you know, we're trying to make somebody say something they're going to regret. You know, we edit the show. So like it's, we try not to make something exploitative, mm-hmm. if that's what you mean by weird.
No, well, I guess I mean sort of like, to separate yourself, you know, like, so your first episode with Tom, you mm-hmm. know, if that's, you know, a guy that you know beforehand, you know, sort of to take yourself out of the role of friend and put yourself into role of interviewer. I think that's more what I meant by, you know, like that sort of like shift in gear with the dynamic that you already have with somebody.
Right. Well, we usually have a pretty strong outline. Jim usually comes up with a lot of questions and we do a lot of research for, you know, even if it's a friend of ours, we try and go through everything we can as much and have like sort of an outline that we're going to go through a lot of questions that we want to try and cover. And I think a lot of it too is asking questions that we don't know the answers to, you know, even though we might know that person fairly well.
Yeah. And that changes a lot with somebody who you've spent a lot of time with, like Tom. You know, we already know, you know, you kind of go through a progression whenever you meet somebody and become friends, and we're further along in that progression with Tom. So the stuff that we're going to talk about, if it's things that we haven't already covered, are going to be very different than somebody, you know, that we've never met.
Mm-hmm. I also think we, from the first episode on, we sort of developed a thing that we do at the beginning of each episode to sort of put everyone at ease. You know, we explain how long we record for, and immediately, like we always say that we record for 90 minutes, but we cut the show down to about 45 or 55. Mm-hmm. So that person immediately knows like a half hour of what they're talking about is going to be taken away. So I think it puts them at ease where it's like, well, a lot of this is going to get thrown out anyway. So, you know, it's kind of, you can feel a little bit less pressure. And they also know since we edit, we're going to clean things up so they don't have to feel like they're making like this public address or something and everything has to be perfect. And I also think like most of the time we record through Skype, we've done some in-person interviews or like on location interviews. But I think as the interview goes on, I think you get more at ease because it's not a video call. It's just, you know, a regular, you know, like a phone call. And I think, you know, everyone's used to talking on the phone. And I think you eventually just kind of, you know, get into sort of this sort of casual.
Yeah. I mean,
rhythm.
It's just a conversation. Like right. Once you start talking, you just react to the you know, it becomes a conversation. So. Mm-hmm.
Sort of the Skype and the microphone flexible. Seems to fade away.
Right, right. And the problem is the better the conversation goes, the tougher it is to edit because, you know, we'll set this rule for like 90 minutes, but if we're really going with someone, it ends up being like 2 hours or 2.5 hours. And that just becomes like...
Yeah, that's a tough... That's a
yeah, this edit. Monumental task just to get through all the material and then figure out what to cut it down to.
Speaking of which, how long are you recording?
For as long as you guys want to talk. See, it's funny, you know, like, in hearing, you know, like, your guys' process and what you do, I feel like I sort of take the complete opposite approach to things. Like, before when you guys are like, so, are we going to start? Are we going? And I'm like, yeah, I'm ready. We're going, right. You know? Your process that you have, you know, with, you know, the sort of the pre-interview talk that you do with people and how you approach and what you say, are these things that you thought about and have been executing since the first interview, or has there been a progression in how you handle your subject?
There is a progression, but really every interview is completely different, you know, like each relationship is different. And so that sort of dictates how, you know, whether there are pre-interviews or how much information, you know, if we know they're familiar with the show, we don't have to go over as much, you know, every single one of them is kind of unique.
Mm-hmm. We've had some episodes where, you know, people are already familiar with, you know, how we edit the show and things like that. So they become very aware and it becomes like a very meta, like, you know, twice removed type conversation.
Mike, can I ask you something?
Yeah, sure.
So you just kind of like get people talking and, you know, collect whatever comes out.
Yes.
Do people understand this media and do they say things that you have trouble then releasing?
No. Because I think that on some level, whenever I'm speaking to someone, they sort of know that, you know, that I am doing a comics media type thing. So they are sort of, you know, they come to the table in their shirt and tie almost, you know. So I haven't run into a situation yet where someone didn't realize what they were saying or hasn't meant what they said. Is that sort of what?
Yeah, I'm curious what do you want when you go into these interviews? Like, why are you doing them?
Well, it's a little different, I guess, for each person. You know, some people I will reach out to that I have no relationship with because I admire their work or I respect what they do. And I sort of want to hear their process. I want to hear their thoughts on what they do. And if I can get extra eyes on whatever project it is, then that's a bonus as well. But I think I'm sort of in the same camp as you guys, where I'm interested in what someone's day is. I'm interested in what their thought processes are behind things. And that's sort of why I asked before, like, who the beneficiary is, who benefits from your conversations, because I sort of think about the interviews I do and the stuff I do for the show as maybe it's selfish, but I come at it in a way where, like, I benefit first, and hopefully the people that listen are in sort of the same mind frame as me, so they will benefit as well.
I don't think that's like a selfish, I mean, like, I think, you know, like, you're kind of curating the guests on the show, you're kind of curating the quality or the, you know, like, I think that's something that me and Jim put a lot of, I think the most thought that we put into the show is really who we want to ask and what, because a lot of it isn't who we know, it's who kind of checks off what category of artist or like what discipline, because I think the more we do the show, the more we want it to not just be comic book artists and illustrators. We want to have like writers and poets and filmmakers and just anyone that does this thing that, you know, there is no roadmap for. You kind of have to sort of figure out on your own and no one can really sort of mimic what the person next to them is doing and have the same results. You know, there's no real alchemy to it, I guess.
Yeah. And that's the thing that's a little bit weird too. You know, like, there is, like, the formulas aren't there, and there isn't a right way to do it. Even in the way that you speak to someone, you know, everyone reacts in sort of different
ways. Well, Yeah, like one of the other really big influences for doing the show was just different podcasts that we would listen to. Like before podcasts, like everyone that, you know, made art would just listen to kind of DVD commentaries or have something like that on in the background. And then
I listened to, I went from NPR to podcasts.
Yeah. Whenever NPR started having podcasts of their radio shows, that's probably what eased you right into it. But, you know, having something like that on in the background when you're working is like a godsend. Like, it's just so helpful to keep, you know, like when you stay in the house 5 days in a row or something like that, it makes you feel like you're not this crazy shut in or something. but
you know, it make like, that's exactly, I listened to podcasts for, you know, like 3 years. Mm-hmm. Like, I probably spent more time listening to podcasts than anything else for like a 3 year period. And I have that. It's the same thing that I do with comics where like, mm-hmm. I want to tear it apart and see how it's built.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the only way you do it is by making whatever that thing is. So, you know, it's
well, like most of the,
to the obsessions,
most of the podcasts I listened to were, mostly like interviews with stand up comics, because that's like something I was obsessed with or like just constantly fascinated by.
They're so good on the mic.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. They're people that's their specialty is talking, but you listen, it's the same as like our show. Like, you try and find this bell curve. But the one like common thing that everybody said was like, you know, there is no set pattern to figure out how to be a stand-up comic. Like, each stand-up comic's voice is different. So no, you know, rules apply to the same people. And you know, art's, you know, very, very similar in that sense where it's just one person, you know, most of the time it's one person all by themselves trying to, you know, recreate something that they, you know, that they like. And, you know, that's kind of hard to do.
Have you guys had anyone on the show yet that you have had that neither of you have any history with?
Yeah,
like our fourth guest was this guy that I ran into at an event here in Pittsburgh called Up All Night, Art Up All Night or
Art
something.
Up All Night, yeah.
But it's just like this open market for artists to show up, and this guy had a bike that he would do, like, generate power on a sewing
machine.
And then he would draw with the sewing machine.
Right.
It was spectacular. Yeah, like, seeing it was just the best thing at that show out of like 20,000 things.
Yeah. His name is Paul Nosa.
And so, I started talking to him, and he was in town for a couple of days, and we're like, hey, you should come and record the show. And, he was the first guy that was a complete stranger. We didn't even know like 3 days before we recorded him.
I think we talked to him the next night.
Yeah.
I think you met him that night and we called him the next night or whatever and talked to him. Yeah.
And he was real, like, it was a real good experience.
Yeah, he was really
you do these little steps, and then you kind of get more confident to try things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the show really got to that, like, this really insane momentum where, like, just things were happening that we hadn't even, you know, planned or whatever. And it was just kind of like, all right, yeah, you know, like, it was a lot of stuff would happen, like, you know, like, how about tomorrow? So there was no time to, like, panic or something. It was just like, okay, yeah, sure.
Just do it.
We got, like, towards the end of season one, we had our worst experience.
Yeah.
Without, like, we won't name names here,
no,
but
I wouldn't ask you to.
We kind of got in touch with this filmmaker who was kind of he had a relatively big movie out at the time, but we had like 2 hours lead in time. It was real bizarre. You know, it was like somebody else scheduling it and things. And it went off. It did not go well.
Yeah, it was not a good experience.
On which end? On his end? On your end? All ends?
I think everybody. I think everyone had a bad time.
Yeah. Oh, man.
The conversation was bad. The reason why we lost it was we had recording problems.
Yeah, we were switching. We had hardware issues.
Right.
Like, everything that could go wrong went wrong. And
it was like we started recording for, I think, a minute, and then there was a problem, and we had to shut off and call him back. And it was just like, as soon as that happened, it was just like,
yeah, it was hard.
The
to come
next
back
like
from.
50 minutes or whatever, it was just like a train wreck.
And this was
but
someone,
I noticed.
And this was someone just that you had no personal.
Yeah,
relationship
we didn't. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
we had
so
never
worse.
Spoke to the person before.
Yeah, yeah, it's the same
bad.
As some of our conversations we had that turned out, you know, to be really great.
Exactly.
This just happened to be the exact opposite of that.
I was going to say, like, you know, most of our experiences have been really positive.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I found interesting early on was a lot of the people we spoke to, this was either the first podcast they were doing or it was the first time they were using Skype, which mm-hmm. was like
a nightmare?
Really interesting. Like, no, it was great. It's kind of like, oh, here we are in the future. You know, right. Let's have, you know, like that was mostly what we would get from people pretty early on.
Yeah. That's true.
We interviewed, like, one of the best interviews was with this. We found a 16-year-old kid to interview.
That was a good episode.
I loved how that turned out.
Yeah. And what was it? It was like Teenager X or something?
Teenager X.
Yeah. We left him be anonymous so, you know, so he wouldn't get in trouble in school, basically.
So after that talk with Teenager X, was there like a, what were your feelings afterwards? Like, were you like, man, nothing's changed, or shit, things are different now? Like,
I wanted every episode to end with an X. I wanted it to be like something else X. Like, that's all I could think about for a few weeks. It'll never happen, but we almost were able to, where it was going to be an episode that was going to be called Drug Dealer X.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Right.
We were so excited for the episode, but yeah. I just don't think legally.
Right. A friend of a friend, you know, knew somebody that we could, you know, get an interview, you know, a hot Geraldo-like interview with. And, I think we were even going to, like, change his voice and everything.
And you guys would get sweet mustaches?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. But it was just one of those things where it's just like, this is just.
Yeah, that's the one that got away.
What are we trying to do here?
That would be interesting, though.
Yeah. Oh, it'd be great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that one would be nonstop entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
What?
But that's that thing where, and we just, yeah, for weeks at a time, it was just emails with, like, what about, you know, insert profession X, profession or demographic X.
What is your, if we could peek behind the curtain a little bit, what's the process that goes into each episode? You know, so clearly there's the initial ask, hey, person X, come
back
on the
show. That's not as clear as you think. Like, the three of us kick around ideas. And a lot of it's based on, you know, who have we had on. Mm-hmm. If we've had a bunch of cartoonists on, then, you know, we try to find a non-cartoonist or whatever. If we've had a bunch of Pittsburghers on, we try to find somebody from somewhere else. So, you know, we kick around names until we find one we like. And then it's like, who's connected to this person that we can, you know, try to set this up. And sometimes it's like sending people kind of like an elaborate invitation, like a package of our work, you know, explaining what we want to do. And sometimes it's somebody, you know, that we all three know, and it's just like, send them an email. And then we start research once we have the guest booked.
And how much research do you do?
It depends how far in advance the guest is booked. We basically, once they're booked, it's just research until the interview.
Yeah.
So if it's 2 months, you know, you can read everything they've done. And if it's 2 days, you skim a lot of interviews.
One thing that Jim's really good at doing is making sure to kind of cover every interview that exists about that person. So whatever questions we come at that person with, it's not stuff that they've already answered like 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. So that's something we also try to do, is kind of cut out anything that we've already heard or we already know the answer to, because it doesn't really, you know, benefit anyone to be redundant.
Yeah, it's just noise. You know, like, there's too much content out there already. So the last thing you want to do is just add identical content.
And I think, too, like, I think we feel like our show is such, you know, like kind of like inside baseball, that if someone's listening to our show, they're already somewhat familiar, I think.
I should say there's so much content out there.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's too much, but there's definitely enough that you don't want to add to it without reason.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another major reason why we edit the show, is we want it to be as concise and as, you know, easy to listen to as possible, because especially I think when we were giving it, you know, well, it's still available for free, but I think that's probably the hardest thing to vie for is someone's free time.
Like, right.
You know, like when you're giving away something for free, you really want it to be at least worth, you know, however long it takes for them to listen to.
Worth that time investment.
Right.
How much effort do you put into prepping your subjects? So how much, like, how much do they know coming in as far as, you know, what they're getting in for before the call actually starts?
We usually send them a list of questions and topics that we may cover, and we usually, you know, we don't cover all of them. But that's given like a couple of days before the interview. Mm-hmm. And then we continue researching and updating the questions. So there's usually some stuff they haven't seen before. And, you know, if we find answers to the questions that we sent them, then we're not going to go back over those.
Okay.
You know, we want to ask them things that we don't know the answers to ourselves. And then that way, who knows where it goes?
So with all the preparation and sort of presenting some of the questions beforehand, have you ever had any discussions that have just gone completely left of where you thought they were?
Oh, yeah. All the good ones.
Yeah, I think most of the episodes end up doing that because I think pretty early on in the interview, the guest knows that we know enough about them that whatever direction they go, we're going to be familiar with whatever they're describing or whatever the material is. Or I think a lot of it is, you know, people that are interested in the same things have a lot of the same, you know, hobbies and share the same aesthetics or, you know, like a lot of the same things. So you find that like you keep sort of triggering things that that person's familiar with that triggers them to talk about something that, you know, conjures up. And then, you know, a lot of it's sort of like reminding each other of things and, you know, it sort of snowballs from there.
Do you guys feel like you have a relationship with journalism or that in doing this in a way you are journalists?
I'm fascinated by journalism and I think that it's an area our country desperately needs right now. Like I feel like the state of popular journalism is in a lot of trouble. So, yeah. I guess I enjoy journalism as a fan, but I don't consider myself a journalist.
Well, the fact that we edit the show, we do take a journalist, you know, we have to sort of say we're taking like a journalistic approach to it. But I think one of the things that we do, I think when we edit, or at least part of when the episodes that I edit, I try to remove Jim and myself as much as possible to almost not have ourselves be sort of the commanding voice in the interview. I would much rather hear the guest talk. I think what journalism has sort of become like almost like writing on the bathroom wall. It's just like everyone that thinks they're a journalist now, like, or just like my opinion of it, it just feels like a lot of it is just people making snarky comments or trying to be, I think because of the immediacy of news with Twitter and everything, like everyone's almost like in a race to be the first person to have like the snarky comment or like the best joke.
Well, it's also, a lot of it's just, you know, like if you think of sports journalism, like if you think of ESPN, it's these guys making predictions, like they're just predicting the future and their prediction rate is horrendous. If you look at any of these analysts, like if they get 50% of their predictions right, you know, they're in the lead on that show. And it's like, how, and you're calling this like news or whatever. It's.
Well, it's also disposable too. Like, it just seems like stuff just is completely forgotten, you know, like within 5 days.
Right.
So to step back just 1 second, Jim, before when you said that you don't consider yourself a journalist, is that because it's not your trade or your profession, or is it because, you know, in terms of doing the podcast, like it's been a relatively short time? Like,
the truth is I don't feel that I know enough about how journalism works to call myself that, but I am going to now add that to like my about page. You guys have convinced me. It sounds good.
It sounds great.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, you got
it. Does sound great.
It's like quicksand. You got pulled into it. You can't fight it.
You gonna order new business cards now?
Or just burn the ones that you brought over to
right. I order new business cards every week.
With your new profession.
Just another, it's a hyphen in another job.
Did you guys read American Psycho?
Yes.
No.
Do you remember how all these guys just sit around and compare their business cards like every time a new person shows up?
Well, Patrick Bateman always had that running narration in his head of like, he would like describe for like 6 or 7 paragraphs, like quality.
Like the weight and the stock and the ink.
Yeah.
Like,
okay. The font was embossed and the choice of the font. And he was like that, you know, guy's like a bastard because like he used whatever it was, stole his font from.
It's so fun. Like, that's my favorite. I love that book, but that's the reason why. Like, it has nothing to do with the rest of the book. It's just those couple of passages. where he dissects a business card.
I feel like that resonates because I think in a way everyone does that. Mm-hmm. When a peer hands you their card, you think about it in relationship to yours.
Oh, I don't do it in terms of business cards, but just like, you know, because I do design, I just judge everything I look at constantly. Like anything that's designed, I just have like a snide, condescending opinion.
I have an American Psycho like inner monologue running at all times.
Yeah. And the funny thing is now is the company I'm working for now does a lot of advertising. So I design like tons of ads. And now not only am I judging fonts everywhere I go, but I'm recognizing all these establishments that I've done ads for. And like everywhere I go, like to a shocking degree, it's like whenever you first start noticing novelty license plates where it's like, that's all you look for then.
I had the that intro piece for Supermag. I wrote it in like 20 different fonts where like each line would mutate a little bit. So it starts out as Arial and it ends up as some serif font.
Wow.
I don't think I'm going to keep that, at least not yet. Like it's not good enough yet, but so that's
right.
There's that.
You had
to keep
that
yesterday for 2 hours.
Wait, so is it like a gradual?
Right.
Oh, dude, you have to keep that. That's hilarious. And like, I feel like that's the sort of joke that so few people will get that it makes it even better.
It's pretty good, yeah.
It's only good if it works, and I haven't gotten it to work yet.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like the sort of thing that, like, for the people who it works for, it will work so well that it'll overshadow anyone that it doesn't work for. I think, at least.
Or by Jim saying that out loud, he's just basically called out all the competition. He's got a lot of competition now.
Yeah, I've been working on this book that's due at the printer next week. And so I'm in like that 24-hour production cycle where like that's the only thing I think of because like I can see the end. Like I have a finite amount of time now to fix as much stuff as I can. That's the mode that I've been in for like a week and I have like one more week to go.
So is that a little bit like panic?
It's not panic, but it's...
It's eyes on the prize.
It is robotic. Like I started exercising maybe 3 weeks ago because like you can get more work done. You know, like it's more efficient.
Yeah.
So I'm in that mode. I'm in production mode.
And then once it goes to the printer, how long until the world has it?
It'll vary. We'll have it at TCAF. You know, so like I'll have it with me in May. I'm doing a bunch of shows in May.
Is this the new thing you're doing for Ad House?
Yes.
Do you want to talk
Super
about
Mag.
It? Do you want to
I
talk
sure
about
do.
It? Can you please?
it's like a magazine. It'd be like if Superman and a really good magazine had sex, this would come out. Supermag. That's about right.
I thought it was something that ended in Mag.
Supermag?
No, but it's like the Super and Superman, but it would be have to be the blank Mag and or the Mag and blank Mag if you were really going to smush the two together.
So it should be like Super Zine because that would be like Magazine and Superman.
Crap.
Super Zine would have been better. You know... this is a change that could happen.
See, this is where you're at.
Yeah, I was
this
just going to say, level. It's not at the printer yet.
I was going to make a joke about that, but now I feel bad because you're at like that.
Yeah, the you're rest of the interview, like I am just now sitting here trying to figure out if Super Zine really is better than Super Mag.
Can I give you my 2 cents?
Sure.
Uh-oh.
I think Super Mag is going to be more widely understood.
No, Super Mag's way better.
I don't know that the average show on the streets is familiar enough with the concept of a zine.
Yeah, but they know a magazine and they know a Superman, so the Super Zine.
Yeah, that's
it really
true.
Is. A Super Magazine is really a Super Zine.
Yeah, because the only other option is Maga Man.
Yeah, and that's terrible.
What the fuck is that?
So it's a little too close to copyright infringement.
Right.
Is it, can we swear on your show?
Yeah, go for it.
I think so. He swore earlier.
Okay, good.
That's why I threw out that.
Did.
I threw out that F-bomb to lay down the law.
In straight command. Do you prefer whenever your guests swear or don't swear?
I prefer whatever makes them sound most natural.
I had someone once that I had to cut out. Well, not I had to cut out, but I cut out like a ton of swears, and there was still a ton of swears.
Who? If there's still a ton of swears. No, I guess. If you don't want
to
say it,
listen
say
to the episode that has a ton of swears.
Oh, that one.
But yeah. Yeah, but it was really funny because I was kind of thinking like, this sounds bad. And then I went through and it's like, oh man, I didn't even try. But I like that about that episode though. It's a fun one.
Can we talk about editing?
Yes.
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 Editing is where all the power really lies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. See, I'm of a different thinking, but go on, please.
It's the part that I feel least comfortable doing because, you know, you basically change meaning as you edit.
Well, you can. I mean, there's a very real possibility mm-hmm. of that happening. But I think the process by which, or at least like the mentality that I think we use to edit is we're basically just removing extraneous materials and sort of just keeping the core conversation.
That was the first stuff we talked to Gary Groth about because he does have a journalism background and mm-hmm. it's the thing I worry about. You know, it's just, you can really change what people mm-hmm. say
yeah.
very easily and it's very uncomfortable.
Well, I think what I usually do, like the way I edit is, the first time I go through, I usually remove anything like mistakes or stutters or ums or uhs, like any kind of garbage. And then I think my editing process isn't so much like removing like a word or something like that. It's usually like picking what anecdotes or what conversations stay in. And I try to keep those as intact and maybe a little bit more concise because it's very easy for someone to get off on a tangent like I'm doing right now. But, you know, like everything I do is mostly to kind of like just keep it as lean as possible, but almost just keep all the, you know, all the good parts.
I haven't done it yet, but there's this comic book called Illustrated Guide.
Oh, yeah. The
Ira Glass yeah. and Jessica Abel put out for This American Life. And it's one of my favorite comics ever, but they go through the editing sequence. And the first step they do is they have somebody transcribe the interview in real time, and then they'll end up, you know, in some cases with like 100 pages of interview, and then someone goes through and cuts that, you know, like you're working on a script.
But I think the key thing in what Jim said was they, as in they as like an intern. Because I think that's the reason why I could never do it, is it just like the idea of sitting and writing down the entire thing.
If we got, if we had an intern, we would have to do that.
That's the only job that they would do. And I'd make them work in my basement.
You guys should totally get an intern.
Yeah, we should. I can make a few calls.
Spring's coming. Spring semester.
Yeah, I've had interns before and it's fun. Well, no. I had one intern at like my regular job. I had one that was really fun. And no, I guess like half of them were fun, but half of them were turds. And if they hear this, they can guess which one's which. But I've never had to do that, like tell someone what to do. And I remember talking to the one intern and just having like their face looking back at me, like just this cold, dead, like blank stare. Like just like, I'm just saying words and I don't know what they're doing, but you're not hearing them. It's just insane.
Do when you approach an episode for editing, do you sort of set parameters for yourself?
We try to like talk to each other and figure out, you know, what did you think was the strongest part of that show?
Yeah.
You know, like what should we open the show with? You know,
so you'll even rearrange the order of conversation.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That's the more daring we've got, the more we've done things like that.
Because sometimes you come, you know, like you'll go off on an interesting tangent mm-hmm. and you don't want to cut somebody off who's telling something that, you know, could be the best part of the show.
Right.
But then, you know, you circle back around to the topic that you started with, you know, depending on how long the interview is. And so so that the interview makes more sense, you may rearrange it because it's mm-hmm. like, oh, those two questions are about the same topic. They just fell 45 minutes apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it started sort of organically. Like one of the first episodes we did, we interviewed like a friend of ours. And then at the end of the time that we were supposed to record, you know, we kind of ended the show, but then we kept talking for like another half hour. And Jim had just mentioned like, oh, I liked earlier when you were talking about this. So that person, you know, expanded upon that a little bit more. So it only made sense to put that information, you know, within, you know, his original ideas of it. And I think from there, it's just been sort of like that on a case by case scenario where sometimes it just makes sense to sort of group, you know, a few of these ideas together rather than sort of have them keep recurring.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys listen to yourselves? I'll reframe the question. Are you subscribed to your own show?
Yes.
That's mostly for quality control to make sure.
Right. I want to hear exactly what people are downloading. Because we've had stuff go up where, you know, there's like a big chunk of just sound drops out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of them early on like dropped out after like 18 minutes in. For some reason, like just something happened where...
Although I feel like people emailed us about that.
I think it all happened around the same time, you know. But
I don't know. By the time the show goes up, I can never remember what made it into the final cut at that point because you've heard it so much. It's the same as like producing a book. Like by the end, you know, you can't judge anything anymore. You've looked at it too much.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I listened to it one last time, like after I cut the whole thing and put the intro in and everything. I'll listen to the whole episode just to make sure there aren't any accidental gaps or anything like that. And then I send it to Jim. Jim kind of does the same thing, and then it goes up.
So even before it's published, you've both given it a listen through?
I think And he does the same thing.
And I assume Ed does, too.
Yeah. Well, now that Ed's in the process, he listens to him. But we usually don't really interfere with each other's editing, just because it's so tedious and so time-consuming, you can't really start nitpicking each other's work, you know, because it's... And also, too, a lot of it is... it depends sometimes on the quality of the recording. Like sometimes, you know, through Skype, like the call might break up a little bit and we'll lose like, you know, even if it's a half a sentence, it might ruin an entire, you know,
thing that person said.
So sometimes you kind of have to cut stuff just by necessity. And so a lot of it kind of, you know, it depends on how the recording goes and, you know, the flow of the conversation. But, you know, for the most part, I think if we're recording 90 minutes and almost 60 of it gets in, like, you know, a ton of it is what actually transpired, and most of what gets taken out is just kind of the nonsense in the beginning and the end.
The more you cut, the stronger what is left.
Oh, absolutely, you know, yeah.
Less is definitely more.
Yeah, I would rather, I think that's why I always push for the episodes that I cut to be a little bit shorter as I'm cutting them, because I would rather have that person, like, at the end of listening to it, want to keep hearing it rather than, you know, be kind of bored with it.
Do you guys ever consider releasing in some manner the uncut interviews?
Not really. Yeah. I don't think there's any... It's not like we've done some interview of like, you know... A lot of what we cut out are just redundancies. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know that we've cut anything that would warrant releasing them.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
I've been... As I started, I forget when I started doing it, like maybe August or September, but as I've been cutting episodes, I have a deleted track reel where I almost have like a blooper reel of just like, like goofy. I was going to try and do that by the end of the year, but I ran out of time like with other work stuff, but I was going to make like a Christmas party episode that would just kind of be like a bunch of blooper reel stuff that was just, you know, and most of it is just stuff that comes out from our introductory kind of chit chat stuff, like explaining like how we edit the show and all that. Like usually almost every time when we tell someone that we edit the show and all that stuff, somebody immediately makes like a very inappropriate comment or joke, like, oh, so I can make a joke about blank. And then, you know, and then it's immediately like, well, now we have that and we can hold it against you.
Yeah, we could definitely be,
if we really put our heads together, we could get like Social Security numbers like within the first 2 minutes and just like hang up. but yeah, like, you know, like really the stuff we do cut out is just like unnecessary, or if it was in there, it would probably just make us like annoying.
The shows are definitely better. You know, we're releasing the good part of the show.
Yeah. Except for that. Yeah, except for when I put out that Christmas episode.
Yeah.
In July. Yeah. So that's how long it's going to take.
How did you guys, how did Ed get brought into this? And I guess from an extension of that, or as an extension of that, how did you get set up with Boing Boing? If that's not too inside baseball.
No. I feel like this whole thing's been too inside baseball.
Yeah.
Who is your audience?
Me, I'm not actually recording this.
We had kind of come to a crossroads. I think we were sort of at a point where we had done the show for a year, and the whole reason I wanted to do a show was to see how you make a podcast. So, you know, it was like, well, mission accomplished. And we had both gotten busy. We had the bad experience I referred to earlier with the filmmaker. Like, filmmaker it just X. was like a bunch of stuff was going on, and we're like, well, I don't know, we'll see. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we kind of got away from it for a couple of weeks, and we were still talking about ideas for the show.
Yeah.
And we did a show in Philadelphia and drove there with Ed Pisker. And the first thing he said when he got into the car was like, you know, that he wanted to work on the show with us. And that was kind of like, you know, I have a high regard for Ed's work, and that just seemed like, you know, much like learning how to make a podcast is by making a podcast, mm-hmm. like learning more about the way Ed works is working on a project with him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how he got involved.
Yeah.
So what's his role?
He does research. He does, I guess, you know, like,
he does notes. most of the correspondence with guests now. Like, he sort of approaches them before, you know, before we figure out scheduling and everything. And he really establishes sort of first contact, and
he also
figures out scheduling.
Pretty much distributes the show for us now. Yeah. Like, he does, you know, he takes care of uploading it. He takes care of linking it. The stuff that, you know, all of these things take time. And they need to be done, and it's something that he's comfortable doing, you know, so it allows us to sort of have, you know, like, it takes less time, I suppose, now,
yeah,
just by virtue of having a third person doing some of the tasks.
And then, I guess your relationship with Boing Boing came from his relationship with Boing Boing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, like, he was going to submit the show to them. And he, you know, like, asked us if we thought that was okay. And of course we did. So, he just sent them kind of a package of some of our shows from the first season. And, that's about the extent of it.
It's pretty awesome. It's pretty exciting. I was excited for you guys when I saw that, you know, and I think I think it opens you up to a new audience, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it opens us up to probably guests, you know, like some different guests as well. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing, is that, you know, now that, you know, yeah, we can use that, you know, we're on a news site, and, you know, it feels a little bit more legitimate, because, you know, right now we're sitting in we're sitting in this, you know, a room in the second floor of my house. It's not, you know, we've been making it up as we go along from...
It's really fun to do something where, like, you're not sure how anything's going to turn out.
It's just like, yeah, let's buy a microphone. Let's get a microphone now.
Can we talk about comics for a minute?
Yes, please.
What are you guys looking at? Are you looking at anything exciting?
Like current or just all, in general?
Current to you?
Yeah, or just like current to like what's on newsstands, I guess.
First one, then the other, or either or.
Okay.
Whatever's current to you guys.
Almost everything that I've been looking at lately is stuff that I've ordered from somebody through the mail. So they're, you know, it's a lot of zines and like mini comics and smaller scale stuff. Like, one of the things I'm most excited about right now is a zine called, I think it's SSE-P.com.
Okay.
I'm hesitant to say that because that might not quite be it. But it's this zine that I picked up in LA last summer. And it's just a collection of like these drawings and hand-drawn lettering. And it's kind of, there's a loose narrative there, but it's not exactly traditional comics, even though it's full color and bright colors and clearly influenced by comics. And it turns out, like, this company publishes, they do an online gallery, and then they publish a corresponding full-color zine of, like, I think an edition of 500 or 1,000. And they've done, like, 48 of them.
Wow.
So, and most of the zine, like, you can see all the work online. It's just really interesting. And, like, the zine itself is fantastic. I want to have all of them.
Yeah, they're so different, too.
Yeah, they really are. And it's just these artists that are making work that I find fascinating, and I don't know what the equivalent is. Like, they're not, you know, like art historian type. They're, you know, it's not fine art exactly, but it's just like people working in their notebooks and journals and doing their own thing.
What's the schedule? Are they published on a regular basis, or is it?
It's, I mean, if it's monthly, that's, you know, 4 years.
Because that's what I was going to say. Like, just imagine if you had a monthly subscription to that, because you really would have no idea what would arrive.
Oh, man, it'd be the best.
Yeah, exactly.
Do they vary format, or are you just saying, like, no idea as far as, like, content?
One was self-portraits. Like, you know, they're photography. Some of them are more, like, written word. Mm-hmm. It just feels like there are no rules for it, you know. Each one is unique.
Mm-hmm. It's like a very well-curated, like, zine of the month club or something.
That sounds awesome. And it's from L.A., you said?
I don't know. No, I don't. I got it in L.A., but I think I got it at some comic book store there. I forget what store is in L.A., and I feel like a jerk for not remembering.
Was it at Family?
No, it wasn't at Family. I think it was at, is there a secret headquarters in L.A.?
Maybe. I think Meltdown?
It's, no, it wasn't Meltdown, although I went to Meltdown.
How was Meltdown?
I didn't buy anything there. So, like, I don't know how to answer that, you know? Right. You know what? That's not true. I did buy some stuff there. I bought the Libertor, you know, the guy that does Rank Xerox, I think's his name. But it was like a heavy metal. He's this European guy from the 80s. Okay. Heavy Metal published a couple of volumes of it. And I think Catalan published some of his work in the 80s. They had a set of those. So I bought those. Like, it's an interesting store. I just don't. It's hard for me to buy comics anymore because, like, my house is literally, it's full. Like, I can't just bring comics in.
So you just squeeze in the front door and stand upright until it's time to go out again?
It really is.
It's terrible.
I don't know when it happened, but somewhere in the past 2 or 3 years, it's just become piles of stuff everywhere. Like, everything just keeps, like, just amassing from, like, the ground up. It's impossible.
I'm in that situation, too. Mm-hmm. Like, in my back room where I do the show, it's just, like, stacks of comics and, like, newsprint stuff everywhere. And
me and Jim stayed with this artist who lives in Brooklyn a couple of years ago and did a show, this Brooklyn comic show, and he let us, you know, crash at his place for a day or two. And he had bookshelves everywhere, completely filled, like crammed with DVDs, but then like stacks of DVDs from the floor to the ceiling. Oh, and it was like, a small, you know, Brooklyn apartment. And it almost like a movie set. There was so much just like media and stuff, like just comics everywhere. And we had asked him, like, what are you doing with all this stuff? And he was like, oh, I'm just saving up for when I retire and I just have time. Like, I'm just going to finally, like, catch up. Like, I'll get caught up on all this stuff. Like, I'll read it all eventually. And it was like a store.
I know. I just ordered Jason Carnes' new comic.
Oh, is that out?
He has a new issue out. I think it's, like, number 8. And he was experimenting with glossy paper, like, printing it on glossy paper. So I talked to him about, like, send me one of the, because he went back to the newsprint. But like, send me one of those glossy tryouts. I have to see what that looks like.
Oh, so he didn't actually print the whole.
He printed some, but he wasn't happy with it, apparently. But I can't wait to see his stuff on glossy paper.
Was he excited to get that request, do you think? Because I feel like.
I don't know. I feel like I'm his biggest fan, maybe.
Dude, I really like his stuff.
Yeah, I think it's super exciting. Trying to think of what else I've been looking at. I have a couple of things. I ordered recently a Blacklight poster book and a VHS art collection. But those haven't arrived yet.
I'm trying to think of anything. Hellboy, the new Hellboy.
Yeah, I've been looking at those.
I like that a lot.
I wanted to talk to you guys about that because I saw the blog post, you comparing and contrasting the digital and the print of number one. Really well done.
I can't believe that people care about that. Like that thing, like a million people saw that.
Well, it's like, I don't know. It's one of those things. It's such a precise difference that it's like infuriating.
But it's so inside baseball. Like if I weren't working in this field, like if this wasn't like, if knowing that, if I didn't think that helped me eat, there's no way I would know that. Like, I don't know that about my car. I don't know why a casual reader would care.
I think the thing with it is, you know, you weren't talking about like color values or, you know, like it was more straightforward and more done in a way that people can easily digest. And I think that even if people don't produce comics themselves, if they're a comics fan, you know, they're invested in visually the medium, you know, and I think that it's interesting to sort of see, especially at this juncture, you know, where we're really seeing like what is a digital comic and what is a print comic diverging. I just think it's interesting. And I think a lot of people, well, you know, from what you're saying, I'm sure a lot of people did as well. But I was curious if you've revisited those ideas with issue two, or is three out yet?
Yeah, I think it came out.
Yeah, I now get both print and digital copies of all of them now. Right. And
because I thought, you know, I thought number two in print looked a lot better than one did.
I think two had a lot more red in it. It might have been part of that. It might have just been a warmer color tone anyway. Yeah, either way, I mean, I like his art so much.
I'll tell you this. I spend a lot more time looking at them on the iPad, you know, the digital copies, than I do looking at the print copies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah. Yeah, I like both. It's weird. It's interesting how... like I've only started really looking at comics on screen in the past year or two. And it's weird how different it is. You know, you don't really see spreads anymore. And
yeah, I have a piece coming up. I'm working on about that.
Oh, really?
Like what, like how digital has affected the splash page or the spread?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Super Mag is all designed as spreads. So it's very weird. Like, you know, like I'm thinking about like putting together a digital version of it. And it's like, how do you do that? Like if it's really in spread, you know, if it should really be viewed as spreads, like what's the solution to that?
I guess you can orient it landscape. What are the dimensions of the page you're working in? Like what's one page dimension?
Spread is 11 by 17.
I think you could do it all in landscape then and just have it orient landscape. The whole thing through. That's like do you guys look at Double Barrel magazine? Kevin and Xander Cannon's thing that they're doing?
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Xander's part of it is, you know, he works in a landscape, so the thing actually orients itself to be red landscape, and I think it works well.
Frank Miller did that with 300. And then whenever they did the collection, they actually printed it. So it was like two land, you know, it was like two spreads. That was always kind of neat.
Have you made any digital mock-ups to try to feel it out?
Well, I mean, at this point, it's all, everything I'm looking at is digital, you know, like it's in InDesign and there are PDFs and I'm adjusting things in Photoshop. So like I spend more time looking at it now in digital format than I am the original pages at this point.
Well, how about like on an actual tablet? Because that will probably be how it's consumed if you put out a digital version, I would think.
Yeah, my plan actually is like it goes to the printer next week. So at that point, I'll turn my attention to the digital version. And I haven't looked at it on a tablet yet.
Okay, I feel like that's an awkward place for people who produce comics right now.
Oh, I think it's awesome. It's just more format stuff.
Oh, that's what I mean. Like the formatting gets awkward.
I hear what you're saying, and I guess I disagree.
Okay.
I hate to say it that way because you're right. This one instance is awkward, But I just view it as like, it's one more, you know, it'd be like people make silkscreen comics, you know, what I'm doing right now, if I tried to adapt it into like a silkscreen formatted comic, it would be awkward, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just all these format options. I think it's great because like I have a thing, I thought of a 2-page sequence today that's going to go in a magazine. And it's like, I have access to that format, you know, like it's a front and a back of a page. Like I need it to go into a book and it needs to not be a comic book. And like, I have access, you know, like having all these different formats available means that whatever idea you come up with, you can find a place that perfectly displays it. So I think it's great. Like I really like the tablets, but I think, you know, you almost have to create with some idealized format, you know, to start with. It's just one more option.
Do you guys think more people should be working digitally? Do you think that would help distribution for cartoonists and smaller artists?
Oh, no. However things are is perfect. Like, everything's great. I don't think more people should work some way they're not working, or less people. Like, no. People should work however, whatever enables them to make the work.
Remember also, too, like you were saying about, like, working in an idealized way. Like, that works for you. For some people that can't do that or don't do that, it's not like that's a detriment to them. It, you know, some people, it's however you can find a way to present your work in the most like appropriate fashion, I guess.
Yeah. I always tell people, you know, like when it comes to tools, it's like, you just want to use whatever tool will make you want to sit down and draw. Cause you can reproduce anything now, you know, like if you like drawing in pencil, draw with pencil. It's kind of great.
Yeah. It's funny that some people still work, you know, in the very traditional comic style, because
I work in the traditional comic style.
Yeah, but not all that. Well, I mean, you also do other stuff in terms of
but
color,
when I do it, it's because I like drawing in ink.
Well, that's just like a format that you really enjoy working in. But yeah, like anything can be printed now, so it doesn't matter what you do or how you do it. Just whatever looks your best bet.
I think that's an interesting idea, that something that was a necessity has sort of become an aesthetic.
Right.
Do you think that people still, I mean, or I guess like Jim, like, do you still work in it in, you know, pencil and then ink on page? Is it sort of like a nostalgic thing because, you know, like that's the process that was used to create the books that first influenced you?
Sometimes, that's definitely true. Like I'm looking for, I did a piece for, sorry. I have a piece in the next No Brow, and it's like specifically designed, you know, they give you a theme and a space. And what I drew for that is kind of evocative of a certain time period where the ink style, you know, is the aesthetic I associate with that time period. Does that answer your, you know, so like it's also the form that I'm most comfortable with. So if I have an idea, while I'm trying to work out how to, you know, finish the idea, like the first thing I'm going to do is probably start in like a notebook or something, just because that's the easiest way for me to, you know, start recording this information. And then as it develops further, you sort of like move it into whatever style makes sense.
That makes sense.
I just think of it as like, you're just trying to master as many tools as you possibly can so that whatever idea you come up with, you can figure out a way to realize that idea to the best of its potential.
Do you ever do like traditional comic style for any of your, either of you, for any of your, like freelance work or any advertising gigs or anything like that?
Yeah, I do quite a bit, you know, that's like the kind of stuff I like to draw. So if someone's willing to pay me to do it.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes that happens too, where, like people that hire, you know, that you like comics or that you're interested in comics. So sometimes they sort of find a way to incorporate that too.
Yeah. We could bring this full circle back to our American Psycho, business cards. But everything that you do is essentially your business card. Mm-hmm. You know, like no one's going to pay you until you do something once and they can see it. So like the first time you do anything, it's going to be a free job.
Right.
But that thing becomes the, you know, sort of the business card because people see it and go, wow, mm-hmm. you know, you should draw 70s, whatever, you know, like that's the kind of, you have to be careful what you produce, I suppose.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I guess that's a good place to leave it. So before we go, what do you want people to know about where to find you or what to look out for?
Well, the show's on Boing Boing now. You can subscribe there. You can subscribe through iTunes. You can find it through our sites, mm-hmm. JimRug.com.
Yeah, and JasonLex.com.
And
our producer is Ed Pisker. You can find him on Twitter at Ed Pisker. Yeah, we're all on Twitter. The show's on Twitter.
Upcoming guests.
Oh, yeah, upcoming guests. Our next episode is going to be Faith Aaron Hicks. And
the show should be bi-weekly.
Right. Every other week now we're going to start having new episodes show up. And, we're going to go from there.
Awesome. I'll let you gentlemen go.
All right, perfect.
Sounds good.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Cool.
Yeah, thanks. No, good talking to you.
Yeah, good talking to you guys. Thanks for everything. Oh, Jim, how's Brian?
What do you mean?
How is he?
He's good.
Good. Well, I didn't mean like in a bad way.
there was a skiing accident you didn't hear of or something?
He's fully recovered. Doctors give him a, fighter's chance.
Cutting the casts off next Friday.
All right, that's cool. Yeah, I just figured, because the last time we talked was with him.
Oh, that's right. You're one of the few people in comics that have met Brian Maruca.
We get
so many people that are like, is that guy real?
Yeah, does he exist?
You were in a room with him.
Is he legend?
That's your claim to fame now, Mike.
Yeah. I'm gonna put that on my business card. I met Brian Maruca.
You should.
That's cool.
All right, man.
All right, guys.
Talk to you soon.
Yeah, you all have a good night.
Thanks, you too.
Bye.